Kate, and this is quite a sweary episode. So if you don't like strong language, if you might be offended, then it's probably best to find another episode to listen to. Welcome to Life, an Inside Job. Miranda is a rare bird. She has an absolutely golden heart. She's a sensitive truth teller. She's super smart, a sharer of joy and beauty, and I'm so proud that she's my friend. She's the sort of person that tells strangers on the street that they have a lovely smile, that kind of person, and I bloom in love for her. We've had loads of great conversations over the years, but one theme that keeps resurfacing is about grief, about time passing and bereavement and the whole ache and joy of life. Oh, and parenting. We also talk about having little kids, about birth, about kids growing up, about teenagers and the whole experience of parenting too. So I asked her if she'd come and do a pod chat because I knew that you would love her as much as I do. I didn't realise that when we'd arranged the date for the pod chat that it was the anniversary of Miranda's friend's death. So this is a raw and tender conversation. Please take care of yourself while you listen. We are so blooming lucky that she agreed to share her worldview with us.
No clue how you would introduce me, and I don't know.
Miranda.
Yeah, basically.
It was lovely.
I'm figuring that shit out still.
Thank you for agreeing to chat to me.
I'm really honoured. Like, really honoured. I really am. And it's nice to have somebody to actually appreciate my ranting.
I think there will probably be lots of people who will appreciate your ranting, though. Well, I think we live in a grief-averse society, don't we?
A grief of what, did you say?
A grief. It's the hat.
Voila.
We're being sensible grown-ups. Come on.
We live in a grief-averse society. Our society does not like grief.
No, but it's really perverse because actually there's beauty in grief.
But I'm a little bit
melodramatic, aren't I? So maybe I just like I said to you, you can't have one without the other. And I think it comes into like healthy mindset and, you know, the craving and aversion thing.
Tell me about that.
So the craving and aversion thing of like, it's quite a Buddhist thing, is that the craving, if something's painful, you're either going to avoid it. And if something's nice, you're going to crave it. Sensations, you know, body sensation, feeling, well, it's all interlinked, body, mind, soul linked. So, you know, your body might go, oh, I really want those cheese and onions cravers, or I really want to hit a smack, or whatever the fuck it is, yeah, that helps you. Like, but basically, that's doing the same job, which is it's avoiding an issue, which ultimately is painful. And I think that is the problem, not grief. I think the problem is culturally, because there's a blanket of people are embarrassed and they don't like talking about it and they don't like expressing or showing enough emotion. I think we're only just starting to see culturally a shift in the expression of emotion. But because there's an embarrassment around that, that's where, for me, I think the center of everything starts. Because grief isn't just losing a person. Grief is everything, as we've spoken about before. Like, it's a loss of a period of time. It's a loss of yourself. It's a loss of nature. It's a loss. It can be loss of anything, right? Like, so, and those griefs are real. Those losses are real. And I told you I'd go off on a tangent.
No, I don't think this is a tangent. I think this is really, this is the juice.
Yeah, but it's all interlinked. And the fact that it all comes down to communication and expression. Expression is so important. What's that wonderful artist that she did that sitting down and just staring in people's eyes.
Oh,
Milena something or other. She did like for a month in New York, and it was years ago, and she just sat and people queued up and they sat and she didn't speak and they just stared into each other's eyes, and you can just see all this emotion. You can see basically also you can see the connection's lost. There's a loss of connection. Mm. And people are walking around like zombies and lonely and frightened and afraid. And everything's a pretense. Not everything, but you know, a facade at least. I've gone completely off grief, I feel, but I feel like it's all interlinked.
I think it's completely on point. I want to back up and ask you, so do you think that it's not particularly that we are afraid of grief in our culture more than any other challenging emotion?
Yes.
It's emotion altogether that is...
Yeah, it's emotion full stop, because even when people are too happy and too revelous and they're partying and they're too loud, they're raucous and they're horrid, or they're, you know, they're vulgar, you know, like it's sort of, and then that comes into classism, which is a completely different, you know, thing, because I think there's a stiff upper lip thing which not every class has. Mm. Within the, I think UK pretty unique with this whole class system from what I can see. Mm. I think it's quite a very, very British or English thing. And I think that the upper class, from what I can see, I don't know, I haven't lived it. I think it's the middle class is at the most fucked up, just to be honest. You know, I feel like it's they're the ones, because they're trying to be something and they don't really know where they belong. Whereas, you know, that whole thing, you know, I'm wearing this cap and pass it down thing, you know, the very clear. Obviously, it's not clear like that anymore, but we all categorise like, oh, they're chavs, or they're this, or they think they're this. You know, the categorisation is still going on, but it's said in a different way. And I feel like, you know, it's the whole Jeremy Kyle thing, isn't it? And that's overexpression of emotion and seen as vulgar. Mm. But the problem is there's no way to channel it in a healthy way either.
So somehow... in our, should we call it English culture?
I think it's English culture, yeah.
I think it might be.
I think it is, I think it is.
That the expression of strong emotion is seen as low status.
Low status and weak, like you're not in control. Mm. You know, like you're succumbed to your emotions. And I get it, like, you know, I've been a mistress to my emotions, you know.
So have you felt, because you started off by saying that you're dramatic, but I think I would characterise you as sensitive.
Yeah, probably. I think that's most probably a coping mechanism that's built in. As a child, I was always told I was very dramatic. Mm. So that's what, you know, that's the narrative that I stuck with. But then that idea of self-protection, as you know, the whole losing a mum at four, you have a self-protection of that period in time a little bit. It's funny, in the course yesterday, I wasn't going to do the course yesterday, and they were talking about the Gestalt, I can't say it, Gestalt, thank you, method. Mm. And I think that's most probably one of the best questions I've ever been asked. It wasn't last night, it just triggered me to remember a question that I was asked, and it was like, what would you say to four-year-old you? Mm. And it's going to make me, that's the core, because obviously losing my mum when I was four, that's the core of where learning to live with loss started for me. Mm. And exploring. And that opened up time, the concept of time, what is real, what isn't real. You know, I lived in my own mind for a very long time, you know, very, very long. I still do. I quite like it there.
It's a great place to hang out.
Great place to hang out.
We all want a party in Miranda's head.
Yeah, but that concept of time and time passing and what is real and what is not real, mm. that started then from that very young age. Mm. And a need to soothe other people. Mm. You know, there's like kind of when you're going against the current, it makes it more painful. And I feel like this lack of being able to express yourself in a healthy manner. I think what I haven't said clearly is over emotion and expressing it in a negative way isn't healthy. At least it's an expression, but it's not healthy either, because it can lead to violence or self-hatred or, you know, other things too that I can't qualify right now, but those are the top of my head. So it's not entirely healthy. What self-expression in a healthy way and being able to explore why and who and what is going on, and to be able to be self-aware to go, right, well, I'm feeling like that, but that's not who I am. And that's the weather, like I've said before, going on, and that's all the stuff that's going on, and that's not the reality. But having that awareness to be able to know that that is what emotions ultimately are, and to be able to say, I'm vulnerable, go gently with me, I don't know where I am myself. It's really empowering to be that vulnerable, to let people know that you need care and that it's okay. And then it opens up a dialogue, and it might not be at that moment in time because you might not be able to do it at that point in time, but it opens up a dialogue at another time. So it's not pushed under the carpet that, you know, oh, it was just a shit day, or it's something that can be revisited. And that is the whole, like, so what would you say to 4-year-old you? To go with it, you know, and to embrace it, and to not just have to be joy and laughter, you know, that you can be miserable as fuck and sad, and that's okay too, and that you don't have to fix other people. And you don't have to fix you, because people don't need fixing, they just need care. You know, that's what they need. They just need to know that you care, because sometimes all you need is just somebody go, yeah, that is shit, you know, and then you're fine, you know. Like, and as I said yesterday, like, snotty, heaving, I needed, it was in my body, I couldn't, I needed it out. And that's the thing that's lost, like, that with grief, I feel is very, that's to do with grief. I think that grief is its own, that's separate to showing emotions. I've blurred all the boundaries quite a bit. I've gone around the houses, sorry.
No, I'm gripped. I'm really gripped. So do you feel that you've been judged for having strong emotions, for sort of being snotty and loud and expressing your feelings?
I think I've suppressed it, but I don't know if it's because I was judged. I think
so you hold stuff in habitually.
Yeah, I mean, I don't hold stuff in, as you know. I don't, I can't, it's me. I can do it to a point, but I naturally can't do it. And I think that's the bit of that was picked up on, that I can't. And maybe there was an element of, I wish I could be like that. Which sounds arsehole-ish for me to say, but like... but that's the beauty of being 4 and not... the ages of my brother and my sister,
yeah,
and my dad, and then to experience loss and other people's loss, and to watch them go through their experiences of loss, and to be not so connected to the person, to have still, it's so the different levels of loss, and it's really complicated. And I think that culturally it's not talked about enough, and I think that grief is not talked about enough, and I think the key point is teenage years. I think that's the key.
Why did you say that?
Because I think teenagers completely and utterly do not want anything to do with adults. We're all losers, obviously. and they don't necessarily talk amongst themselves about it, about what's going on with them. I mean, I feel like our generation of kids, our children, is like they use all this, like, technical words, but have no fucking clue what they're talking about, because they're on Google all the time, and they're all self-diagnosing, but not actually talking to each other.
Yeah, I was amazed how they don't. They seem to have all the, they know all the stuff about mental health. Mm-hmm. They know all the stuff about self-care and connection, mm-hmm, and all this stuff. Exactly as you say, they have the language.
Mm-hmm.
But when you actually ask them, they don't talk about important things with their friends.
No, they don't. It's really odd, and I don't understand. Yeah. So they think that they are doing, they think they're walking the walk because they know the language and they have a certain level of awareness, but they're not actually talking.
Yeah.
You know, so I think the teenage years are crucial, but it's really difficult because they don't want to talk naturally. It's a time where you feel uncomfortable and awkward and you want to go in. Then most people go within themselves in teenage years anyway, right? So it's a really difficult time, but I feel like that's the time when actually you most probably need to start the avoiding it. That's the time you most probably need to talk the most. I feel uncomfortable. My body's weird. I'm scared. How am I supposed to snog a boy? What is this going to feel like? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm scared of sex. You know, I've got pubes. It grosses me out. You know, like, I don't want to be a grown up. It's shit.
Yeah, look at your life.
Yeah, exactly.
Who wants to grow up?
Exactly. Yeah, and I feel like I haven't got the answers, because if I did, I'd have to kill children are really communicative, and I haven't thought that. I don't know.
What about the beauty of grief?
The beauty of grief is the connection to the person, and it sounds a bit weird and perverse, but, you know, you can't love somebody and have that connection with somebody without risking loss. Mm. Anything that's worthwhile of real human contact and emotion will ultimately result in loss at some point in time. Mm. Whether it's because, you know, you just naturally somehow the distance comes between and it's a soft moving away from someone, or whether, you know, something happens and in their life and that there's a tragedy, mm. or whatever happens, there's an element of loss, because it might just be that you were great friends at that point in time and you're not anymore.
Mm.
You know, or there's a beauty in it. It does sound really perverse, but it does. You can't have a baby without pushing and having pain.
Mm.
But if you fight that pain, that birth's going to be worse, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it's the same, I feel like, with grief, because it is a rebirth. I see it as a rebirth each time
mm.
I've experienced. Like, I now am in rebuild. I'm like looking, I'm doing an inventory. Where am I? What do I want to do? What have I learned?
So just for the people who are listening, you lost a close friend last year.
2 years ago.
Two years today, actually.
Oh, yeah. 2 years today. And I have experienced quite a lot of grief in my short amount of time on the planet. I'm very grateful I haven't lost like my whole entire family, and I'm very much aware that there's people who have also lost more, but I have had there's a lot of people and a lot of significant people that I was close to, but the one recently was the one that I was connected to the most and knew me before my husband and my children, and was a chosen family member
mm.
and believed in me and loved me and was awkward and messy and complicated and beautiful and funny and fun mm. and connection is that, isn't it? That's all those things
mm.
and as I said to you before, it's not just that. It's like at the time of my life, I don't know if I'd feel, I think I'd feel absolutely heartbroken as I am, but also it's linked to my past and letting go of my younger self and looking towards my older years. And it's all at the same, come at the same time.
Mm.
So, you know, I'm a middle-aged woman. And, you know, I'm moving into being, I think I've already started, actually. I think I'm perimenopausal. And I feel like it's all interlinked. And it's grief with grief, if you just see what I mean.
Yeah.
So it's all... I do feel like it's a gift. I do. I really do. Which sounds... I just feel like it gives you a chance, just a chance to say goodbye and move forward to the new and to have an inventory and to work out who you are and what you want. And that's actually a gift, isn't it? You know, because you could plod along carrying on round and round in circles, thinking that you're moving somewhere, which half the time I do anyway. you know, it does give you a chance to really take an inventory and work out like what is important and what isn't. And, you know, on a bad day, I'll be like, oh, it's all just, you know, what's the point? We're all going to die anyway. But on a good day, it's, you know, actually, this is helpful. And I'm able to appreciate and really appreciate and understand the value of true connection. That I know that not everyone maybe is as lucky to have had as I am. And I'm proud and happy of that, you know, and you can't have that without loss, can you?
I think you have a gift for connection, you know.
Aww.
I think you do, because I, you know, when we're out places and walking down the street, you know, you stop strangers and say, oh, you've got a lovely smile.
Yeah, but they think I'm that batty old lady. It's my aim.
They look a little startled to begin with, but then you can see their faces, they kind of soften and their faces light up, and you're just a connection machine.
Yeah, because that's all that is most probably the four-year-old me. As in, that's all that anyone wants, isn't it, is connection. And when you're so acutely aware that that's lost, and we're walking around, like I was saying before, like, you know, the artist and like all these lonely people, we're all just, you know, take the bodies away, we're all from the same pot. We're all from the same source. And, you know, all we're looking for is connection, because we're trying to get back to it all the time. So, you know, why not cut the shit and go, yeah, how are you? You're all right. No, like, really, how are you? Not the boring, yes, I'm fine, thank you. Like, you know, how actually are you? Like, you know, and you're an out, I mean, you know me, how many times have I gone, yeah, I'm great. Actually, blah, 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 blah. And this person did that. And that one pushed me in the shopping queue. No. But that's what life is, isn't it? It's reality. It's the connection is in the reality and the honesty and the authenticity to be able to open up. But I don't let all my shit bear for everybody. I might say hi and spread a bit of kindness, but true connection is like, I find it hard to open up. You're very honoured.
Well, I know.
Thank you. I don't mean it like that, but you know what I mean? Like,
well, I am, because I wanted to, that's why I invited you to talk
and
to
I'm
you.
A little bit
I
like,
wanted to share the Miranda goodness.
I'm like a little bit like, oh shit, this is going to be shared. Oh, sugar pants. Oh no.
Sugar pants. It will be.
So yeah, you know, and I don't think people, when they look at me, it's so interesting. I find what a social experiment is, I think the whole loss thing is also understanding how people size you up and judge you. I feel like I've spent a lot of my life being judged. I think everyone is. It's not just me, but I think I've looked at it, and because I haven't liked some of the boxes that people have put me into, and felt, because it made them feel a certain way, or it made them feel like they had that connection with me.
Can you give us a specific?
You know what it's like. I can't think really. Do you know what it is? Because I've kind of let go of that kind of side of thing, because I kind of, my ethos is, well, fuck them, kind of thing. And my small circle, who I feel would know aspects of me that I have shared, that's the connection, where I've shared, not where they've told me who I am. And that's the difference, you know. So I am the first person who is outspoken, and I am the person in a group would most probably put their hand up and say what everybody else is thinking. I am that person, and I try not to be, but I can't, because it doesn't sit very comfortably, you know. So, and I'm sure that really pisses people off and gets up their nose, but like, and they'll form judgments of me, but, well, whatever. you know. But I suppose I have. I think when I was younger, not now, but when I was younger, I definitely, you know, was put in some sort of corner where I don't think people would ever really want to even listen to my opinion. So, you know, I would force it, but that's fine. Yeah. I think I appear as a very confident person and I'm not, because I'm outspoken, and the two aren't necessarily the same. And, you know, as I tell my kids, confidence isn't something that's just given. You have to, you know, you have to cultivate and work on that. That's something that one day.
What does that mean, confidence, though?
Well, it's really, it is a complicated one, isn't it? It is really complicated. I don't know. Like, get back to me when you've got the answer, because that I don't actually know. I don't know. I feel like true confidence is that you're happy to be who exactly who you are, but still have the ability to question yourself and take on board kind criticism.
But not the other kind.
Malicious evil one. But yeah, I feel that. That's confidence. You know, I most probably have got a bit too much of a, oh, fuck them. And I've put myself on the outside of life quite a lot because of that. And it's a protection. Mm. And I don't think, I don't know if that's something that's fixable or changeable is the wrong word. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think that I have to just sort of embrace that. I mean, I've always felt like an outsider. I've always felt like somebody on the outskirts of social situations, and I don't think people would see me as that because I'm overt. But I am definitely that person. I think there's very few people who've seen that firsthand to know how sometimes uncomfortable I actually am. So that's a weird one. That's not about grief. We've gone a completely different thing again.
It's interesting though, isn't it, about what creates confidence. There's a kind of optimism in there that things will be okay. There's a kind of thing about, there's a piece about feeling that you deserve stuff, or that you can ask for things, or that you have a right to hold space somewhere, or to right to be somewhere. There's all sorts of different, I've never really thought about it before, but there's all sorts of different things. I mean, self-esteem, again, you know, when you have too much of it, I've heard people say that, you know, that our problem is that we have too much self-esteem. we all walk around in this big arrogant I who deserves stuff, which is why the world is in such a fucked up place.
Yeah, but I fundamentally don't believe that. I fundamentally believe that we're like, you know, we're all connected and we should be helping each other way more.
Yeah.
And living in way smaller communities.
Mm.
That communicate with the other small communities and interlink, so everything's a bit more micro, so then the macro works better.
Yeah.
Instead of macro and the micro is fucked, which is basically what's going on, yeah. You know, because things need to be led by community and spirit, and people should feel free to express themselves and pass on some joy or sadness or whatever it is, not sadness, but, you know, to express themselves in whichever way they want and feel necessary, and to feel like someone will hear them.
Mm.
And it all comes down to loneliness, doesn't it, I think? And self-esteem and loneliness and confidence, all of it's so interlinked, you know, because if you're lonely, you're not going to reach out to someone. But having the confidence when you're lonely to say, actually, I'm lonely, you know, like that is when I feel like nobody's actually on the same page as me, or, you know, everyone's in their own little zone and sphere, you know, you don't have to just be your archetypal, you know. I think that's what I'm trying to say. I think that there, that links in, that drills down into this perception of being protection, but also embarrassment and shame. Shame's massive,
oh,
isn't
yeah.
it?
Shame, yeah.
Shame is massive. And the confidence question, I feel like all of the things that you said, but confidence is cultivated by practice, which is so self-esteem. So self-esteem and confidence is kind of, it's kind of, I don't know, it's a very subtle line, isn't it, between confidence and self-esteem?
Mm.
I don't know that question. Do you know?
No clue.
That's bloody hard, that one. I don't know. I don't know. All I know is I tell my kids, because I go, oh, I'm not really confident. I'm like, yeah, but confidence and self-esteem is cultivated. You're not born with it.
Mm.
You have to work on it. And the more that you do that makes you feel better about whatever it is that you're doing, the more confident you're going to feel in your abilities and your own voice. But I had never thought about people saying that we were overconfident.
Mm. You know, that was quite an interesting viewpoint. Okay, let's circle back to grief again. And whenever we've met, we inevitably have a conversation about time and time passing. And nearly every milestone that I've spent with you, you've gone, yeah, the time. And the grief comes. Maybe you could say a little bit about that.
Because I like being alive, and I like the trees and the flowers and experiencing connection and love, and I like all that stuff. I really do, and it just it goes. We've got such a small little window of time on this moving rock, and you know, I believe that there is something beyond us. Otherwise, I think I'd go crazy. But the rational, scientific part of me says, well, it's nice to believe Father Christmas, isn't it, love? Do you know what I mean? You know, it makes you much happier. You know, ultra religious people, Jesus, I would love to be one of those, you know, to have those, that nice security blanket. If, you know, someone in a golden cape's going to come and bring me along and make my life great afterwards. And I suppose there isn't it's a weird thing, because I flip flop from, we're all connected, we're all one, look at the flowers and the trees. And actually, on a very basic level, we are, because we're going to die, we're going to decompose, and we will end up going into the ground in some form, and hopefully nourishing it if we're not in some awful cesspit. But, you know, and so ultimately, it's truth. Mm. So on a very basic level of that, yes. But time passing, I think it's the stages of life. I find it hard to let go. You know, when the kids, oh my God, this is so pathetic, but it's true. Every time the kids were young and you'd have to sort out their clothes because there's no more clothes in the bloody wardrobe, I would literally sob.
Yeah.
I'd sob, you know I would. I'd be like, it fit us anymore, it's gone. Oh, it's gone, where's my lovely little...
Yeah, some really disgusting vest.
Yeah,
exactly. Grimy and covered in banana.
Exactly, and you know, load of old crappy took, but obviously it's symbolic of they're never going to be that... they're never going to be that person again.
Mm.
And for that moment in time, they were that person. Now I have to get used to the new bloody person, and I have to like learn to how to navigate that person, and they got to do it all over again. And but also it's like a sort of celebration of going, I really liked that bit.
Mm.
Like that was really fun. And your teenage years are not my comfiest years. And I thought about this a lot, actually. And I think it's because I have to let go of the reins, not be a nutty control freak, but also step up for myself.
Mm.
And that's scary, really scary. You know me, I've always had like little courses and doing bits and pieces and but real investment of, okay, this is what I'm doing. It kind of like that scares the living life out of me.
Mm.
And I can't quite work out why. I feel like there's a fear of, I don't want to miss a thing with my family.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm not in for the big things, like, you know, they're important and everything, but I'm more about like the time you're in the kitchen and you're making some nice food or, for instance, it's big deal, teenage hugs don't come often, right? I don't know about you, but they don't.
I'm a teenage pesterer. I pester them. I'm like this horrible needy person going, hug.
Yeah, me too, but still go, yeah, exactly, whack, go away. So now I'm like, okay, try and be cool, Miranda, be cool. Who wants to be around a needy person? No one, so be cool. Be cool, you know, and I'm trying to...
How's that working for you?
Actually, I've gone from... I was very reactionary in my approach to listening to teenagedom. Now I'm trying to listen.
Oh.
And it's actually really hard, but it's working.
In the kitchen, we have a pin board with photographs, and there's one of his first birthday party. And I was feeling a lot of grief and a lot of emotion and fullness because I had made it. It was about the hardest year of my life, the hardest 2 years of my life. And I can feel it now. I've made it to that point. And, you know, how do you celebrate a one-year-old's birthday? It's like, it doesn't mean anything to them. It means nothing.
For the mum, for sure. Every time I've had a big first birthday, because fuck the kid, it's for me. Yeah, excuse me, but like, you know.
Yeah. So I rang you up and went, and you came in like a sort of, like a mum mate paratrooper, and you presented with a plastic crown. She said, "This is Ace, they love this shit." Which of course she did. And there's a picture of her sitting in a high chair with a wonky crown on.
Oh.
I remember that, yeah. But it was that sense of time passing and the kind of exhaustion and grief and sadness. It is kind of exquisite, that sense of precious time passing.
It really is, right?
Loss. And there's that.
Look, it made my heart. Look, you just saying this has made my heart go boom. It's physical.
Yeah.
It's physical. That's the bit that people don't talk about. This is physical. It's not some, you know, I know you know, all of it's connected. All emotion has such a massive impact on your body. But grief, I find that, and anger, I find them the most powerful.
Mm.
A tug on the heart, you know, like I know exactly what you're talking about. I remember, you know, and like each stage is like that, right?
Mm.
I grieved them before they even came out. I remember saying to Terry, I don't want to share. I don't want anyone to touch my baby. It's my baby and it's with me now and I don't want to fucking share. He was like, you understand, you're nuts. I went, yes, I do, but it's my baby. I don't want to share. I'm not ready right now. Let me just go through this process.
They hadn't come out.
Hadn't even come out. I'm still pregnant. Halfway through pregnancy, that's like, you know, like towards the end where you feel a bit safer to actually sort of say those things. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I was like, I'm really not ready to share, actually. Like, you know, that's the thing. It's our thing, you know? Like, you know. it's to do with time passing and ultimately everything we think is precious. The stuff and the things, you know, no one really will give a shit about them. They care about the memories. After saying that, I instantly thought, I have a chopping board. This is going to make me very sad. My brother-in-law made everybody chopping boards, not everybody, but like a good few chopping boards for a couple of people. And I was very honoured to, I've got a kid coming in, sorry. To get a chopping board, and every time I see that chopping board, I remember him saying, "This will live way beyond me."
Oh,
I know. And that's the thing, isn't it? That's the thing. The stuff and the things—they don't matter, do they? It's the memories, you know. Like it's the moments and the joy and the same. It's a complicated one, isn't it? It's the stuff and the things. See, saying that, I'd love having that chopping board, and every time I see it. And he said, every time you cook, and that's why I did it, I know you'll think of me. Yeah. Because no one wants to be forgotten either, do they?
Mm.
I mean, that's what the arts are based on, isn't it? The arts are based on expression and no one wants to be forgotten. No one wants to be left behind. And I don't know, my objective is to not leave anything behind.
Hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I'd be happy with no stuff and things, no one to have to come and clear out and put my shit in the dump. You know, just to have good feelings and something that's a memento would be quite nice, and to leave this planet not with more crap.
Yeah.
But that's quite a big thing to do, because you really are even letting go of yourself. And that, I mean, people do that though, don't they? You know, I watched this Japanese guy, and I can't remember his name because it's me, you know, I don't remember these things. But that is how he lived his life, and that's how he died. And it was like he went through his own grieving process of losing himself. And I don't know, that's like, that's kind of next level shit, isn't it?
I think I'd have to put on my big girl pants for that one.
Yeah, I think it's just that I have a family, so I haven't the privilege to be able to do that. I think you most probably can't do that with a family. It's too cruel to the people that love you. But it's pretty amazing and brave and fantastical thing to do. Yeah.
So to close up, what would be your tippiest top tip for a wonderful inner life?
Oh God, that's not a small question. That's a really bloody big question. No way. You can't ask that. Like, I can't answer that in two. Is there a clock ticking? What? That's a life's work. Oh, look at you. You're really pleasing yourself, aren't you? How do people answer this shit? Like, Jesus.
Well, it's really interesting because, of course, it's a trick question, as you cleverly spotted, that there is no one tip to make your life better.
No one tip. There's no one tip.
But nevertheless, we support our inner selves and nourish our inner lives and our capacity to feel and express a little bit at a time, you know. So in a way, it's incredibly vacuous and ridiculous question, but on another level, you know,
I think it's always listening. I think we never really grow up, right? We're always that kid at the end of the day going, oh, it's really shit being grown up. And yeah, I think it's remembering to keep that person alive. Whatever that age was, whether it was 10-year-old you and you loved being on your bike, and you, or whether you loved crocheting, or whether you loved being in a garden, or whatever it was that made you float and your boat at 10, it's not the thing, it's about the feeling. The feeling that gave you joy when you were a child, that made you free. I think that is the thing, and if you can have moments of those, that's pretty magical. I think that's really magical. Just remember, because I think the kid voice, the inner kid voice, is always the right voice. Not always, but, you know, because you've got the adult going, all right, yeah, you don't need to have a tantrum, it's fine. But you actually might need to.
Yeah, and in the search of joy and connection, kids are pretty good at that stuff.
Kids are magic. I think that's why I enjoyed, you know, a four-year-old child does still believe in Father Christmas. They believe, you can tell them that the fairy's going to take their dummy off the tree. You know, they listen.
You told your kids so much shit.
Oh my God, they laugh about it so much. We did do quite cool things too. We did like the children police. We didn't call it the child catcher, we called them the children police. You know, the pink monkeys were always in the trees.
Pink monkeys, yes!
The pink monkeys, yeah. They, like, you know, just to have, I still do that now when there's an argument. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, do something. Yeah, all right, Mum, there's a pink monkey, we got it. You know, yeah, to still have that magic and have that joy and to believe, you know, because it's freedom. That's what that is. That's true, true. For me, that's true, true freedom. You know, you kind of, nothing really is as exquisite as that kind of freedom and that kind of joy. And I mean, going back to the beginning, circling all the way around, you can't have that without the risk of loss, which makes it, like you said, quite an exquisite pain because you know you've had it.
Mm.
It's like, you know, you've having that, yeah, it's that having that, it's having that wafer thin mint. It's having that one too many jam tart, you know, like every moment was amazing, but afterwards you go, oh God, I do feel a bit crap now.
So much tenderness in there. Oh, wow. If this episode has touched you, you can always pop over to Instagram and add your voice there. You'll find me under @Kate_Codrington. Well, under, you know what I mean, right? And if you've enjoyed this deliciously meandering episode, it would be fabulous if you felt able to share it with a friend who might like it, or even leave a review and say what it was like for you to listen to. And don't forget to join me very soon for another exciting voyage into the inside world.